This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
Welcome back to the first episode of 2024. What's going on, Katie?
I mean, let's be real. You and I both thought that we would be recording this episode in 2023, but here we are, Saturday, the 13th of 2024, because everyone should be so proud of us. When we took a break, we took a break.
We took a real, genuine break.
Chilled.
We leaned the fuck into the chill mode so hard.
Highly recommend it.
I will say I did have to travel a lot, so that part was not chill, but it was fun.
It was fun traveling, part of which brought you here for us to hang out on the last and first day and the second, which we'll get to. But yeah, take a break from anything, including your hobbies. Like, sometimes you just need to take a break from extra things in your life and you know, do what you can. Ash traveled here. I'm sorry, I'm just talking so much because I miss the podcast.
I know I miss this so much.
How do we do this?
How do we handle life? I went from New Jersey. We drove down to DC. We took the auto train, which was a pretty interesting experience. We had dinner with some crazy Canadians, and then I went from DC to Florida, and then Florida back to New Jersey, and then the next morning, New Jersey to Pennsylvania. Katie and I had an incredible New Year's
Eve. Yeah, we did.
If we're being
honest. It was amazing. It was so good.
Let's talk about all the things that we did.
Okay.
Do we go in order? Well, we went to the grocery store and we got,
of course,
sushi.
Sushi and cheese.
The important things. Or was that?
Yeah, no, we got cheese.
Yeah, we definitely had cheese because we were eating the cheese as snacks while we were mood boarding.
That was,
yes, it was either during the mood boarding or it was during, no, we were making our Junior Jules Taylor Swift shirts,
of course.
How could we forget?
Of course.
Which I accidentally put mine through the wash and everything except for the black permanent marker.
Yes. So second note of the year. If you guys are going to draw on shirts, it is worth it to look into multiple colored Sharpies and or maybe fabric markers.
Yes.
Because now Ashley's shirt,
it just says Junior Jules.
It just says Junior Jules.
And then on the neck, it's got like the black lines in between the colored triangles that were supposed to be there. Yes. At least I can redo it. But it just, God, we spent so much time on them.
We did.
We really did.
We really did.
We did that. We watched a ton of Psych.
Oh, so good.
So much Psych. I love that show so much. We also went live on TikTok and played a Hunt a Killer game. So we were solving a murder.
Oh, yes. Homicide at the Heist.
What a great topic of play for us. And then, our lovely friends of the pod, Julie and Spencer, they joined us basically the entire time.
Help us solve the murder.
Some of that shit is really hard, especially when you have to like use ciphers and shit to figure out secret codes. That is so difficult.
And I had a lot of edibles.
There was a lot of weed smoked.
A lot.
Oh, we had the mirror ball balls. We had the mirror ball cups. Those were fun.
Yes.
For our non-alcoholic beverages.
Mostly soda, coffee, water.
I had that delicious the Canada Dry.
Cranberry.
Oh. God, it was so good. I wanted to point out that it was non-alcoholic because of the first thing that happened on the first of the year.
That's totally fair. That's totally fair. I can attest that no alcohol was had. And I also want to point out that it wasn't just my stairs' fault.
It was not just the stairs. I will preface this by saying that on my feet, I had a pair of socks that were gifted to me for Christmas by my lovely mother, and the outside is knit. The inside layer is fleece, and so comfortable, but also not fully attached the layers. So in Katie's very old house, the set of stairs is very steep. And I was coming down them on January 1st, on New Year's Day, coming down them from going to the bathroom right in the morning. We just woke up. And I took one step down and honestly, thank God your shit is carpeted. But I think that's also a part of like what did me in. The knit part like stayed still on the carpet, and then the fleece inner lining of the sock moved. So I went feet out, like arms up, all the way on my ass and my back, and slid down every fucking step. And then I hit the bottom. You come running from the kitchen. You're like, what is going on? Yeah. And I'm just cracking up at the bottom of the stairs because genuinely, like, yes, it hurt, but I can't believe that just happened. I was like, really? Like, this would happen to me.
It was a cartoon. The way, like, legs out from under, just like
spread eagle.
And the angle in which you like turned to get around my corner. It was wild. It was wild.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Yeah, so then I ended up staying at your house for an extra day because, like, immediately my wrist hurt, but my back was, like, fine that day.
Yeah.
Immediately my wrist hurt, and it was my dominant hand. I was like, there's no fucking way I'm driving 2.5 hours with my non-dominant hand and the other one, like, being in pain. And then I was like, that's fine. I'll just leave, like, super early the next morning so that I can get to work. I got to work at like 10, so only an hour late. And I think I should have driven home on the first, because when we woke up that next morning,
yeah, the back.
My back. It was so bad. It was so bad. Oh boy. I'm okay now. I had a glorious fucking massage the other day, and then I saw my chiropractor the next day, and I'm okay.
Good to go.
Everything is fine. But whatever. Perfect. Katie and I, it was the universe being like, spend more time with your friend. Because then we mood boarded that
day. Take the excuse. Just take the excuse.
Yeah.
Ashley fell down the stairs.
I fell down the stairs. If anybody wants to see, I definitely have a picture of how steep the stairs are too. A part of me wishes that you had like a security camera that's like the inner doorway or inner entryway of your house pointed towards, like, inwards towards the stairs, because it would have gotten like at least the bottom half of the
floor. It would have.
And that would have been hilarious.
It would have.
I would have gone viral for sure.
And the thing is I could totally have a camera there. I have a camera that I could put there.
I mean, if not for nothing, the future, because we all know I'm never going to wear those socks on those stairs again. But we all know that I am also accident prone.
The stairs take a little bit to get used to.
Yeah, it's just the steepness of them, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're skinny. They're skinny, like, it's thin. And I'm clumsy.
We want to get them redone eventually, but, you know.
I'm grateful they were carpeted because that helped. I also didn't hit my head, but I'm glad that I fell the way that I did, because had I fallen forward and taken a tumble down that way, I'd probably be dead, or I would have broken something.
Oh, 100% you'd be dead.
Uh-huh.
Like, these are the kinds of stairs that, like, we really should put some sort of, like, baby gate or something at the top, because if you go down, even, like, if you accidentally, like, trip backwards somehow or something, like, you're dead. A person is dead.
You're dead. Like, honestly, I think I got so lucky. The universe was like, this bitch is gonna fall on the first day of the year, but she's not gonna die.
Yeah. Thank God.
So, yeah, that was the start of our year.
Well, then we watched the Eras Tour movie, finally.
Oh, we did, finally.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Oh, and then I had to give Goose an emergency haircut. She had some poopy pants.
She did have some poopy pants.
So it was a day.
It was a day. Yeah, I think while we're like in this groove, maybe we should just get started. So this week we're going to be learning about greenwashing. We're going to answer the questions, what is greenwashing? What are the impacts of greenwashing? What are some real examples of greenwashing, and how do we combat it?
Love this topic.
Thank you.
Love this.
I thought that it was a good one to, like, ease into the year with, you know? It's still very poignant and still very important for people to know about, but not entirely insane.
It's a really good one.
Not like a deep dive. The term greenwashing was coined by Jay Westerveld, an environmentalist, in an essay Jay wrote in 1986, criticizing a hotel in Fiji for asking guests to reuse towels as a way to be more sustainable, while at the same time, the hotel was located near a sensitive island ecosystem, and the hotel was in the midst of an expansion.
Wow.
Greenwashing is when a company or organization, quote, spends more time and money on marketing themselves as being sustainable than on actually minimizing their environmental impact, end quote. And that's from earth.org. So incredibly manipulative of a business practice, and it creates a lot of confusion for consumers who are actually attempting to make conscientious purchasing choices. It also makes it harder to combat climate change and pollution in our waters and air pollution when corporations choose to lie about their business and manufacturing practices.
Absolutely. And I think I don't know if you're going to get into this, so stop me if you are, but like, they definitely do that on purpose.
Oh, yes. Okay. Why do companies do this when they could just simply change their business practices? The answer is always profitability. The cleaner and greener practices and manufacturing systems tend to cost more to switch to. And we all know that heads of companies hate having to make those monetary expenditures and would rather just pretend like they did.
God forbid that it's their problem to deal with.
God forbid you fix the problem that you created. There's also the fact that millennials and Gen Z have created a business trend of making better choices as far as the sustainable choices. Personally, I have companies that I refuse to purchase from because of their impacts on the environment and where they stand on systemic issues. In a McKinsey report, it was found that Gen Z is more likely to spend their money on companies with ethical practices. It's so funny because a few years ago, when I was still working in salons, we had this kind of like life coach speaker person come in who, God, I'm blanking on his name right now. I think his first name is Jay. I can't remember his last name, but he was really great. And we'd seen him like multiple times. And this specific time, he came in to talk to us about the fact that Gen Z is quickly going to become the biggest spending power in the country. And the talk that we had was focused on the fact that Gen Z is much more ethical in their like spending, buying practices, and how that is impacting like the salon industry. So, you know, I mean, that's just across the board economically. People who are younger and see how terrible the old ways are for the environment and the impacts that it's had and on the impacts of their future, they're like, oh no, like, fuck you. If you're not actually going to care about us and our future and what you're doing to our planet, we're not going to buy from you.
Yeah, Gen Z has definitely grown up with the awareness that the only thing businesses actually care about is their dollar. Mm-hmm. And they have really found a way to, I don't want to say like weaponize their money because it makes it sound like what they're doing is a bad thing, but they've really found a way to use their money as their number one form of social justice and protest and like forward movement, which is awesome.
Hit them where it hurts, man. Hit them where it hurts, right in the pockets. In a Nielsen's Global Corporate Sustainability report, it was found that 66% of consumers would spend more on a product if it comes from a sustainable brand. That number jumps up to 73% among millennials. Woo-woo!
That's awesome. Hell yeah.
Companies clearly see that there is a financial gain when appearing to be ethical. The problem is, who is pretending and who is actually taking the initiative to change their actual practices? And how are we, the consumers, supposed to know who to trust? So let's go over a few ways to decipher greenwashing. I have a great list from the Natural Resources Defense Council, the NRDC. We'll get into some real life examples of what companies have done in a moment, but first, these are some forms of manipulation used by companies.
Oh, amazing.
Mm-hmm. So this will help when you're doing your grocery shopping and shit like that, and you're like, okay, I have so many fucking products to choose from. How do I know? So the first thing is nature-based imagery, such as trees, leaves, or animals on product packaging and in advertisements can imply sustainability, even if the company or product either actively harms the environment or takes no real steps to protect it. Just scan the aisle of bottled water brands and you'll notice a trend. Packaging featuring scenic naturescapes and pristine rivers, lakes, and springs. In reality, the companies that manufacture bottled water are some of the world's biggest contributors of plastic waste, and they often drain ecologically essential water resources in the process of sourcing.
I can think of like multiple, like Fiji water definitely has
Poland
like
spring.
Ooh, yes. Oh, there's another one that has like trees on the back.
Trees on the back. I don't know, but you're definitely right. You're definitely right. I'm like, wow, I can't think of brand names of water. Environmental buzzwords. And these are usually things that have no legal weight, like natural or eco-friendly, and they tell you very little about a company's specific sustainability practices. This language is intentionally vague enough to remain subjective and unregulated while still attempting to convince customers of a product's benefits. You should be especially skeptical of greenwashing tied to sectors known for their environmentally harmful practices. Such as logging and the various industries it feeds. Even labels that promote a specific benefit, like BPA-free, should be approached with caution. That's because, as public health advocates note, the chemical industry leans on a laundry list of regrettable substitutions, i.e., similarly toxic chemicals that have become routine replacements for better-known offenders. So they're like, oh, look, we don't have this in here. But don't pay attention to all the other chemicals that we replaced it with that are also bad for you.
Man, I wish I remembered more. I did a science fair project in sixth grade, and I actually went to the California State Science Fair afterwards.
Ooh.
Where my friend and I would like wash clothes, basically following the instructions for different laundry detergent, and then water plants with the wastewater from that laundry. And like see how the plants that, you know, the control versus like the environmentally friendly one and like all of that stuff, how that played out. The environmentally friendly one fucking killed our plant so fast. And that was a huge eye opener for sixth grade Katie.
Yeah.
That's really when I started to learn. That's when I started asking some questions.
Good for you.
It's 2001. I was like, okay, wait a second.
What does this mean?
This has trees on the package?
Rude. How dare you?
Liars.
Products that lean on official looking labels. Companies that produce plastic products often try to assuage customer guilt by prominently featuring the ubiquitous recycling symbol or language like, please recycle, on the packaging. The logo may make someone feel like the choice is greener, even if that type or mix of plastic is difficult to recycle in practice. It also puts no real onus on the manufacturer to actually reduce waste in its supply chain or to recycle, for that matter. As it stands, the world continues to recycle a meager 9% of the 440.9 million U.S. tons of plastic waste produced each year.
That's
absurd. It doesn't even begin to reach how awful that is.
I'm sorry, can you say that number again?
9% of 440.9 million U.S. tons. It's not just million tons.
That's insane.
Like, I actually can't even begin to process what that means in my brain. Like, that's how much that is.
Yeah, I was like trying to conceptualize.
Yeah.
Bro, we're a trash. Ton with like. Like, I'm trying to think of it in terms of, like, truckloads.
Gotcha.
But then it just, like, gets to a point where...
my brain hurts?
Where I can't. My brain, like, literally cannot understand.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'm really upset. Okay.
Companies that tout their latest sustainability initiative, but that do so to draw attention away from the harmful activities making up the majority of their business practices. When the company Ozinga Bros recently proposed building a massive underground storage facility below Chicago's residential Southeast Side neighborhood, it laid the greenwashing on thick, says Gina Ramirez, NRDC's Midwest Outreach Manager. The company touted the possibility that its invert mining project would eventually house green businesses like solar panels or vertical gardens. However, Ramirez knew it'd more likely become a place for toxic industry to congregate in her already overburdened neighborhood. Ozinga Bros hoped to bolster its green reputation by planting trees, putting an environmental activist on its staff, and even building a community center that was quite literally decked out in green. But when it came to discussing the mine, they failed to provide studies on the expected impact to air quality or transportation. Quote, "You'll see tree plantings, recycling, promises for green infrastructure, but then the means to get that supposed green infrastructure is really hazardous to your health, like blowing up dynamite to mine for 17 years and bringing thousands of additional diesel trucks into the neighborhood," end quote, Ramirez said. You want to mine underneath a residential neighborhood, and you think that you're gonna like offset all the fucking danger that you're gonna do while you're doing all of this like work and making the neighborhood green? Like, it's not, no, that doesn't offset it at all. You're just creating more fucking problems and then like slapping a flex seal on it.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the ability to like plant trees, you should do that.
Anyway. You should definitely do that.
Just do that. For like everything else, you know, like all of your other environmental problems. Why? Why do you need to mine
under a residential neighborhood? I promise you, you actually don't, though.
Yeah, no, you don't at all. Like, what the fuck? What the
fuck? It was a good example of it. You know,
that was a great example. Also, who is this?
I know. I was like, who the fuck is Ozinga Bros? It's spelled exactly how you think it is.
Is it a concrete place? Custom concrete solutions and concrete materials?
Out in the Midwest in Chicago?
I think so.
It's got to be it. That makes sense for what they want to mine.
It's, yep, it's them. I found them. Evergreen Park, Illinois. Yep. Mm. What the fuck? Mm. No, you can't mine under a residential area.
In a I'm sorry. City. That's so weird. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. Ambitious climate pledges that sound great on paper, but offer few specific or quantifiable changes that actually reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the near term. You've probably noticed that thousands of companies have publicly rolled out net zero pledges, including fossil fuel companies like ExxonMobil and BP, that have no intention of stopping further pollution-producing development. That's because it's possible to finagle the math to imply emissions reductions on paper while continuing business as usual or even increasing climate pollution. The way that this works is that companies can rely heavily on what are called carbon offsets to zero out their own emissions. These are commitments to take an action that reduces carbon emissions elsewhere, like paying to conserve carbon-rich land that otherwise would have been developed. But not only are the climate benefits of offsets not guaranteed, a conserved forest could be lost to an unexpected wildfire, for instance. There simply isn't enough land available to allow everyone that plans to rely on offsets to do so, right? Like, every, think of every fucking company. Well, I'm going to take this piece of land, we'll plant some trees here. What happens when you run out of space to plant the trees, but you're still fucking polluting the planet?
Yeah. Do you just like cut those trees down and plant more?
And start over. Like, what are we doing? So without first changing polluting practices, these net zero pledges are a form of greenwashing because it's a fucking waste of time. And since we're on the topic of offsetting carbon, let's start with this real life example of greenwashing. So a lightning strike created a fire in the Fremont Wainema National Forest in Oregon. And because of drought conditions, the fire pushed out of the national forest and wound up destroying white fir, ponderosa, and lodgepole pine trees owned by the timber company Green Diamond. This was known as the bootleg fire. So keep that in mind.
Okay, hold on. So, yes. Lightning strikes. Mm-hmm. National Forest and it sets fire mm-hmm. and it spreads to like a company's
privately owned forest
that they were gonna like cut down.
No.
Okay, just privately owned.
Privately owned, but I want you to keep in mind that those got destroyed and keep in mind the name of the company. And this is coming from National Geographic. The kiddies really want to be in the episode today.
Seriously, it's all Pete. He's just like, hey, it's time for my, I'm ready to shine.
Time for my close-up. So from National Geographic, quote, Microsoft has committed to one of the country's most ambitious corporate carbon cutting programs, aiming to reach net zero emissions by 2030, not just for its own buildings and factories, but also for its supply chains. It's a lot of shit you gotta make up for.
A lot. I was gonna say, they have like a bunch of like mining that they have to make up for the ingredients for their actual computers. I mean, like cobalt and shit. Like,
Since curbing emissions outright will take years, Microsoft announced that it was investing in a slate of projects that would pull 1.43 million tons of carbon dioxide from the sky. That included 200... Are you laughing at the way
you said that? It's just like how I used to talk to 2-year-old Gabe about like air filters. Like, and then it takes the bad things out of the sky.
Oh boy. That includes 265,000 tons of CO2 that Microsoft had paid Green Diamond to remove by increasing the growth of trees, many of which had just gone up in smoke in the bootleg fire, returning their carbon to the atmosphere. So it's like, bro, because of the conditions that all of these companies have created with all of the fucking toxins going out into, you know, it's like you created this fucking problem and then it's destroying your solution for the problem. What are you gonna do about it? What are you gonna do? You need to change your business practices because clearly this is not fucking sustainable.
Clearly it is not working.
It's not working, bitch. As companies face increasing public pressure to limit their climate impact, the global market for forest carbon credits, already worth billions of dollars, is booming. Like it's all a fucking money game to them. They don't actually give a fuck. Polluting companies can buy those credits as an alternative to cutting emissions from burning oil, gas, and coal. Such offsets have been questioned on many grounds, including whether they actually reduce carbon in the atmosphere. But scientists are increasingly focused on a new concern, climate change itself, with dying trees around the globe from droughts, heat waves, pest invasions, and wildfires, amplified by global warming. Experts say it's getting tough to count on any particular patch of forest being alive and reliably storing carbon for decades to come, end quote.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And this is the problem. It's like, you guys think that you can just like buy some more fucking trees, but you're the ones who created the problems where now we're having insane natural disasters and crazy amounts of fires that are literally, the smoke is going from one country to another. Lest we forget what my summer was like here in New Jersey with the fucking fire smoke from Canada, where we had to seal off our like fucking windows to be able to breathe in our homes. It's insane.
Jesus.
So it's like, you can't rely, these companies can't rely on being able to offset their carbon because the forests are getting destroyed. Jesus. It's a sick cycle.
It's really fucking terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like, they need to stop.
Our next example, back in 2015, Volkswagen admitted to cheating emissions tests by, quote, fitting various vehicles with a defect device, software which could detect when it was undergoing an emissions test and alter the performance to reduce the emissions level, end quote. That's from earth.org. They were actively using ad campaigns during that time, saying that they had low emissions and eco-friendly car features, and the engines were actually emitting up to, quote, 40 times the allowed limit for nitrogen oxide pollutants, end quote, BBC. 40 times the allowed limit.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh, you're not just cheating. Like,
yeah, that's not just like, oh, I'm making our normal regular emissions look better. That's, I'm making our extra, extra bad emissions look really good.
It's so frustrating.
Holy shit.
That's like psychotic.
Holy shit. Dude, that's wild.
And we wonder why we can't get these car companies to like actually go above and beyond the regulations for like testing their cars. They're lying about the goddamn emissions. Like,
yeah, they're lying about everything. Oh my God. What the fuck?
In 2018, Nestle put out a statement that they were looking to have their packaging be 100% plastic-free by 2025, but never came out with any clear guidelines on how to achieve that or a timeline of efforts.
We're looking, but...
Back in 2020, Nestle was named the world's top plastic polluter, along with Coca-Cola and PepsiCo, for the third year in a row. All three of them are the top plastic polluters in the world. They've got 1 year to prove us all wrong and do better. 1 year.
1 year.
1 year. We're gonna circle back to this next January.
All right, hold on. I just need to like.
I'm coming for you, Nestle.
Look up some Nestle products.
Nesquik. Chocolate milk.
Oh yeah, but like to be on par with soda.
Yeah.
It can't just be chocolate milk.
Oh no, I mean Nestle has a shit ton of products.
I know, that's why I'm like, I need to look it up. Coffee Mate, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Oh, Dog Chow dog food.
Dude, they got their hands like dipped into like every little market. What?
Fancy Feast.
I've never had to buy that before, but
I use Fancy Feast. But it's metal.
Oh, well, that's good.
Hot Pockets. Oh. I just like love looking at the things that companies own. Lean Cuisine is owned by the same people who owns Hot Pockets. That's wild.
While you do that, I'm going to go into the next thing.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Okay. I love you. In the U.S., what's that face?
Perrier sparkling water.
Motherfucker. I'm so glad that I stopped drinking it because I saw that there was some like bad, something in it that was not good for your body. And I was like, oh, I could just not. Now I can't remember the details, but I was like, oh, I'm just going to not drink that.
I don't drink it either because I'm too much of a child. I just drink soda. Like I'm the worst.
Yeah.
For some reason, that really shocks me. Okay, I'm done with the list. Continue.
Okay. In the U.S., the Federal Trade Commission is responsible for regulating green advertising at the federal level. They are the ones who sue companies that violate their environmental marketing guidelines, and they've been doing that since 1992. Greenwashing doesn't just affect the trust of the consumer. It also has real health impacts on communities of color and low-income communities. Many of these companies choose to house their manufacturing plants where they are burning plastic in those areas. The burning of plastic emits toxic chemicals linked to health issues such as cancer and birth defects. Out of 8 facilities researched by the NRDC in an investigation of chemical recycling, 7 facilities were located in those areas. I just like wasn't surprised when I read that. I think disappointed, just not shocked. Unfortunately.
More shocked that it's not 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
But like still to have it, just to like have it confirmed on paper and not, you know, like this is the kind of stuff that people love to be like, oh, like that's not true. That's exaggerated and stuff like that. But to like have those kinds of numbers be confirmed and then to have someone try and turn around and be like, no, there's no such thing as systemic corruption or racism or, you know, like,
yeah,
everyone is treated equally in America. It's like, the fuck, they're not.
I can tell you from personal experience of the town that I live in, no, the fuck it is not, because all the towns around us are like the nicer towns. And then Manville has this reputation because there used to be a fucking asbestos factory here. I live in what was the old factory housing. Like literally my neighborhood is the factory row houses. I mean, there have been multiple sites that needed like federal cleanups because they were toxic. Multiple in town. I live only blocks from where the asbestos factory was, Johns Manville. I have to tell you, because I work at a funeral home in Somerville, there are a lot of cancer cases from lifelong Manville residents. Yeah. A lot of cancer cases from lifelong Manville residents. And it's like, we are the blue collar, low income town in the area.
Yeah.
And toxic chemical plant. So
yeah,
it's fucking real. The greenwashing that these companies are taking part in is only making it more difficult for companies that are taking proper steps at accountability and sustainability practices to be given a platform. What can we do about greenwashing? The first step is obviously knowledge and awareness. The fact that we're talking about this and you guys are listening is the first step at spreading this information and making others aware of what is happening. Joining with consumer advocacy groups is another way to make an impact, as well as environmental advocacy groups. And then from the UN, I have, when possible, take time to research and choose products from companies who use resources responsibly and are committed to cutting their emissions and waste. A great place to start your research is to check if the company is aligned with any of the UN's climate and sustainability initiatives, such as the UNFCCC's Race to Zero or Fashion Industry Charter for Climate Action and the UN Alliance for Sustainable Fashion, among others. Reporting violations to the Federal Trade Commission on a large community-based scale is also a great way to apply pressure, especially to an agency who should be prosecuting these companies who are breaking the law. And you can also work with your local leadership to create more laws and regulations surrounding greenwashing and other environmental regulations. We have to make the government work for us. And that...
Yeah.
Is greenwashing, folks.
Clapping for you, not for greenwashing.
Thanks, Katie.
Wow, dude, that was a really phenomenal episode.
Thank you.
I talked like so briefly about greenwashing in the fast fashion episode. Yes. And I remember being like, God, this is so interesting and stuff, but not really knowing if like how I didn't think I couldn't make an episode out of that. So yeah. The way that you put that together and all the info you brought, dude, that was awesome.
Thank you so much.
I just learned a lot. That was great, dude.
Yay, first episode of the year.
Yay, first episode.
So I hope you guys enjoyed those nuggets of information, and we're looking forward to so many more episodes this year.
Hell yeah, we are.
We'll see you next week. Bye. We'll
talk to you then.
Bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.